It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. It is the podcast that puts the spotlight firmly on second place.
The show that just won't die.
That will not die. No, this is all I have left, Kahuna. Behind the ones and twos, as always, one of the best sound engineers I know. One of my great pals in this world. The Big Kahuna is with us, as always. How you feeling, bud?
I'm good, man. Thank you for bringing in the beers.
If we're going to make you work on a Sunday, we're gonna have a fun Sunday.
Thank
put
you.
It that way. And then also, to her credit, who also showed up with beers here today, at a shared universe studio in Eatontown, New Jersey, Mike and Ming taking great care of us, as always. But we're joined by the meanest girl in the world. My sister, Carrie, returns to the show.
How's it going?
Not bad. I don't know what you just gave me as a beer. I don't know what I drank, but it tasted like Frosted Flakes, and I loved it.
It was good. It was an IPA by Decadent, wild berry smoothie.
Who brought in Frosted Flakes and didn't offer to the fat fuck that is Big Kahuna?
Sorry.
That's the problem.
I'm very upset now. I don't know if I can continue this podcast.
Well, they're making the IPAs now to the point where they do taste like candy, so we're actually
confused.
Yeah, we're incentivizing alcoholism.
There's one that's coming out that fascinates me. It supposedly tastes like Lucky Charms.
That sounds disgusting.
I heard about that one.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that one yet, because the big part of Lucky Charms is the milk mixed with the sugar, but no, I don't know.
Sounds magically delicious.
You should have seen the eye roll.
You were waiting on that one, weren't you? You were just sitting there like, I've got this prepped, I'm so good to go, and then you said it, and you just feel, that just made you weak.
We got to introduce our guest now, too, to make sure we do this right. One of my great friends in the world, one of my favorite comics to work with, a guy I worked with, we had a great time on Friday, brother. Mr. Ted Daniels joins the show here. How you doing, bro?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
I'm good. You showed up in it's a Jersey-centric podcast that we do, so you showed up in a Jersey Devils jersey.
Yes.
So I respect that one, my friend.
Throwback Zach Parise.
And throwback Zach Parise, and not for nothing, you're giving us time here on – yesterday was your birthday. Today's your birthday celebration.
Happy birthday.
Yes. Thank you.
So happy birthday, Ted Daniels. Thanks for being here with us, sir.
My pleasure.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to talk to – because you listen to the show, which I love. And that's my new rule moving forward. No guests that don't listen to the show.
Okay.
So I have to leave?
Simple rule.
It's a very simple rule. Carrie only listens to her own episodes. There's a little narcissism here.
Yeah, it's possible.
But that being said, we have not tackled one topic in particular yet. We have not talked about a topic that Teddy and I are obsessed with, World War II. So
really?
We just haven't had anything that's popped up yet with that. And it's interesting because my grandfather fought in World War II. He was with the Army Engineers, Combat Engineers, and he was a Bronze Star and Purple Heart recipient. And I would sit with him and I would talk to him all the time. I love talking to World War II vets. It's because they don't know how we see them. So it's very funny because these guys will sit – like my Uncle Stevie, he would sit there. He was like, oh, yeah, I used to drive the – amphib, you know, the landing craft. He goes, I landed all the troops in the LCUs on D-Day.
Jeez.
And I was like, Jesus Christ. So it's terrifying to land on the beach and have to attack it. Now imagine getting back into safety. You know, you drop off these guys, and now you have to turn around and go back and do it again.
I have enough trouble walking on the beach now in the summer. These guys are fighting and landing.
Yeah, it's insanity with that, man. But the more you look at the personalities, though, it's very interesting because there's some big personalities in World War II. And the guy we're going to cover today that I'm fascinated by, did you know anything about it? Because you're a more learned man than most.
I absolutely knew nothing about him until you mentioned his name, and I've been reading a lot about him.
He is a loser, as we're going to confirm here. The loser scale, as Kahuna has demonstrated for us, there's the Charles J. Gatto's.
I love that you brought this back. Yeah, I love this.
Is he still the number one loser?
Yes.
I think he is just because he was Manson before Manson. But there's a lot of interesting – sometimes we have sympathetic people here that people are like, I don't think he's really a loser. You're just being mean. This guy's got a little bit of everything going on here. So as you guys know, I'm a diehard New York Giants fan. Teddy is one of the true gangrene diehard Jets fans that
unfortunately.
I know, right? So a little shared history here for us on this one. Carrie cheers for the Buccaneers because our parents didn't like her as much. Here's where we're going to start off on this one. Bill Parcells coached the New England Patriots. You know, he was the Giants head coach first. Coached the New England Patriots all the way to the Super Bowl in 1996. He would then leave the team the following year to coach the New York Jets. All right. He took with him to the Jets his apprentice of sorts, Bill Belichick. Belichick would eventually go on to become the coach of the New England Patriots, and they have won, at the time of this recording, 6 Super Bowl championships. All right. While in New York, however, an unlucky son of a bitch now had to become the interim coach between Belichick and Parcells of the New England Patriots. Ted, I know you know the answer to this one.
Wait, oh, the guy who coached
Who was the coach
after
in between?
Parcells?
Yeah, so Parcells leaves, and before Belichick comes in, he's a famous guy, but he got a real shit raw deal on this one. I'll give you a hint. He won a Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks.
Oh, Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, poor son of a bitch, man. Could you imagine knowing that if you had just been in the right place at the right time, it could be Pete Carroll's the greatest coach of all time that we're talking about?
Yeah.
He's a good coach. Don't get me wrong. He's a very good coach. But he's not Bill Belichick.
No, there is no Bill Belichick.
That's it. I don't even think Bill Belichick's Bill Belichick. That's how crazy that one goes.
No, he would have run the ball in that Super Bowl instead of throwing.
Throwing daggers right away, Kerry.
Yeah. Why did he?
I like what you're
doing. Got to live up to my name.
You are the meanest girl. That is true. now, not for nothing, as we the comparison I'm going to make here that's interesting is while Carroll was in New England, he goes 27-21 over 3 seasons and results in his dismissal. So he takes a team that made it to the Super Bowl, barely makes the playoffs his first year, and then finally ends like 500. Mm-hmm. So what winds up happening now is they get rid of him, and you need to have the right man at the right time in order to have success. So everything can be laid out there, but if you don't have the right people to make the things happen, nothing's going to happen. The best laid plans aren't going to happen from an architect if you don't have a builder to make something happen.
Yep.
So what winds up happening, Bill Belichick gets put in over in New England, and the rest is history at this point. And that legend continues to grow, unfortunately. We're trying to woo the New England market to listen to this show. All right.
Well, you got the wrong guy on with you.
No, I know that. That's why you're going to keep us honest. so this is a very strangely similar case to a guy. Today's loser that we're presenting is General Lloyd Fredendall. Okay? Weird name, Fredendall, first of all. Not a, and I don't know anybody named Lloyd, really.
He sounds like he should have been on the other side.
That's it.
Lloyd is like the name Murray. Like, you really hope you don't meet any kids named Lloyd or Murray.
Yeah, it's, then that it's just, aged
that
works. Now.
Because then that just means your parents don't love you.
Yeah.
it's a weird thing, man. But today's topic is General Lloyd Fredendall. He was in position to be the hero of World War II until he was fired and replaced by the legendary General George Patton. Okay. Now, you're going to see just how big of a decision this winds up being as we unpack this story here, but we'll go to his early life if we can. Now, Kerry, you didn't know anything about this guy before we started either, right?
No, but he's actually pretty fascinating.
Very fascinating.
Yeah.
And he's there's a couple of qualities to him that we'll get into as we go here, but Lloyd was born in Fort Warren, Cheyenne, Wyoming, on December 28th, 1883. He was born into a military family, usually a good way if you're going to have a military career. You wind up being born into a military family. This is very common. There's almost a warrior class of people, even in today's military. But his father, Ira, was retired from the Army as a lieutenant colonel, and due to his strong political connections, he was able to get the endorsement of the Wyoming senator, Francis E. Warren, not Elizabeth, Francis E., for Lloyd to enter West Point. Because in order to get into West Point, you had to have a senator endorse you, pretty much.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's weird. Would any
still is.
Yeah, but would any senator endorse Teddy Daniels?
No. Not
no,
at all.
That's
not at all.
The jewel of Jersey City?
They would just laugh.
But, so it's interesting here because now Francis E. Warren signs off on him, and Lloyd's mother, who's a domineering woman, as we came to find out, domineering means bitch in Latin.
So am I a domineering woman?
I mean, I haven't called you a domineering woman in a couple of years.
Not to your
if
face.
You feel that, if you feel that's a better description, you do you.
But so this domineering woman, here's how big of a personality his mother is. She actually accompanies her son to West Point, right, to drop him off, make sure everything's okay here. But she goes ahead, she drops him off, and within one semester, Lloyd drops out due to poor math skills. They literally talked about what a soldierly little fella he looked like. So he was imagine looking the part and then just being so stupid you can't, you know, tread water. But supposedly he was good at everything else, but he was really bad at math. Kerry, do you know anybody else who was really bad at math?
Kahuna?
I think I do. Yeah, K.P. Burke.
Yeah, that's
math is not easy.
If I was good at math, I'd be in medical school right now. Instead, I'm sitting here with you three shitheads.
I don't think you'd be in medical school.
No, hey, that's not a very nice thing to say.
That's the also true.
The closest you're going to get to medical school is being a cadaver.
Not bad, Ted. Not bad.
Oh, fuck.
Well, now he gets dismissed from West Point after one semester, and his mother then pressed and persuaded Senator Warren to endorse her son yet again. That's what a big personality she is here. Gets the senator to sign off on him again. He gets back into school. He's considered to be a decent student in other areas, but he's so bad at math that if he had graduated from West Point, he'd be considered goatly, or even worse, the goat. Do you know what that means, Ted? It
means being at, like, the bottom of the class.
Exactly. Yeah. So at West Point, when you're the goat, that means you graduated last in your class. Famous person who was a goat in American history, who graduated last in his class, George Custer.
Oh, I was going to say really? Grant.
No, Custer graduated last in his class, and we know how that worked out for him.
Like, actual,
he was also
like,
bad at math. There's only like 8 or 9 Indians over there. Yeah.
See, like, wait, like actual last, like bottom of the like the last person on the very
last one. So if they had like a class of 32, then he would be the 32nd student. You know what I mean? So he's the bottom of the boat here. Now, it's funny, too, because when they talk about a goat, nowadays we hear goat, we think greatest of all time.
Right.
Right, and that's not really what it meant back in the day. So in order to avoid the shame of what he thought was going to possibly be him being a goat or goatly, meaning that you know, he's going to be in the bottom half of the class, he goes ahead and he actually drops out. Now, even though Senator Warren is willing to endorse Lloyd a third time,
jeez,
how annoying must his mother have been?
Or just, how good was his mother.
I didn't put that on her.
See, there's normal relationships with your mom, and then there's Norman Bates and his mother. And I feel like, is this going to lean more towards Norman Bates and his mother?
Well, because I like what Ted's doing, because there's almost, you wonder if it's a Forrest Gump thing or if it's, she's just such a bitch that when, hey, you know, Fred and Doll's on the phone, she wants to talk to you about her son. He goes, just sign the letter. Whatever I have to do,
I'm not talking to her.
So now this time, West Point actually gets the endorsement from Senator Warren to put Lloyd Fredendahl back into the academy. And they say, thanks, but no thanks. Not for us. All right. You're not one of our guys here. Now, it's weird because West Point, it sounds like a dick move. And West Point gets it wrong a lot. But as it goes, you know, as the story continues to unfold here, I think we're going to realize West Point might have had a point.
Oh,
so, okay. Yeah, it gets a little bit out of control here. Now, they go ahead, they say no go, and he has to retreat to his safety school. Now, we started off kissing the ass of Massachusetts and the New England people. Lloyd Fredendahl Safety School, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Yeah.
Which, he's bad at math. How did he get in?
I don't get that.
No, you guys are both right, too. It's very bad. I said that to my father earlier when I was telling him about the research for the show, and he just goes, huh? It made no sense to him, man.
No.
But Lloyd was now, while he's at MIT, he's undaunted by this experience. He decides he still wants to be in the military because that's what his dad did. You know what I mean? That happens a lot. So he wants to prove himself. And he's also, again, a soldierly little fella, as they kept calling him. So if you look the part, you want to get, you know, actually do the thing that you do. Like, I have no neck and broad shoulders, so I work in construction. That's just how it worked.
Yeah, Fred Flintstone, that's how it goes.
It's yeah, I get called Barney Rubble a lot. It hurts my feelings. So that's what happens when I grow my hair out. But
oh, my God.
Anyway.
I didn't know you heard us calling that.
Well, back to our boy Lloyd now. He is undeterred, right? So much like when I grow my hair out, I get called Barney Rubble. This guy's not listening, okay? He's going to screw the haters. And he goes ahead. He takes the officer exam, does well in the officer exam. And through the ROTC program at MIT, he winds up getting himself into the Army as an officer, earns a commission as a second lieutenant.
He actually placed first on the exam out of 70 applicants.
See, so all you have to do is just lower the quality of candidate. And so West Point's worst is now MIT's best.
Or he figured out how to cheat.
Right. That could be finally. It, too. Yeah, he sat next to Patton. That's weird. All of a sudden he's doing
I'm going to go with the cheating thing.
Exactly.
Well, now it's interesting here. Lloyd gets sent overseas to serve in the Philippines because we had a conflict going on over there. That was the second part of the Spanish-American War. A lot of people don't know this. The Spanish-American War was fought and guaranteed the freedom of Cuba from control of Spain, and we were able to beat up Spain pretty good. but we also took on the Philippines as a colony. So we fucked up, all right? Because if we had taken Cuba as the colony, we'd all be going on vacation to the islands together, cigars, beautiful women. Instead, we went to the Philippines where it rains a lot. But they're fascinating people there. Lloyd gets over to the Philippines. He's later mobilized to the Western Front during World War I. Now, Ted, for the listeners at home, is the Western Front in World War I a good place to be?
No, not at all.
Not a vacation spot?
No, I would never think of going there.
But it's in France. France is beautiful.
No.
No.
There's so much culture.
What was the
city of love.
What was the death rate in World War I on the Western Front?
The conditions were absolutely brutal. And if you were actually on the front, you were seeing some crazy shit here. Because as you and I are both listeners of Dan Carlin.
According to the math, it's basically according to the calculations, it's pretty much everyone.
Yeah, the math was also done by Lloyd Fredendahl.
When they sent you to the Western Front, one of the things they had you pack was a body bag.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
That's a true fact.
It's a true fact.
Get the fuck out of here.
I thought that was a joke.
Here.
No, that was not a joke.
Pack your own body bag?
Yep.
It was not a good place to be. Now, where it would be a good place to be.
Pack your own body bag. Good luck, soldier.
It's the only thing I'm bringing.
We have faith in you.
Dig your own grave.
Oh, damn.
But if Lloyd actually found a good place to be stationed over there, because Lloyd is now developing a reputation all over in Europe. He's an excellent teacher and trainer, and he served as the head of the overseas schools for the Army. So if you can be like, I'm off to the front lines to teach these other guys how to do the dirty work. So pretty good gig. You have to have admin people. We shit on the admin people all the time. But if you don't have admin, people aren't getting paid.
That's right.
Supplies aren't getting ordered. I mean, admin's that's the thing that makes everything work. So we would shit on the guys when I was in the Navy. We would shit on the admin guys a little bit. But they were always cool guys. And then on top of that, if you weren't friends with them and you went to them with a pay dispute, they're like, yeah, we'll get to it.
So, yeah, 6 months.
Yeah, never mess with them. Also, one of the best shots in all of the Navy that I ever – in my 6 years of – the best shot I ever knew was my buddy Derek Bernal, who's a Dallas fireman, I think. I think he listens to the show, too. So if you're listening, Derek, I love you, pal. But yeah, that was a guy who was secretary by day, badass by night. Hmm. So if you pissed him off, if he was ever an office shooter, you know what I mean? If he ever went postal, we'd all be in trouble.
So he's Batman?
Essentially. But now Lloyd is over here. He's now on the Western Front, but he's in a comfortable place. He's teaching people, right? By the outbreak of the war ends, he winds up getting promoted to lieutenant colonel, made a name for himself as a quality teacher and administrator. In between wars, he actually continued to be in all these schools, and Lloyd found himself promoted at the outbreak of World War II. America's still, you know, neutral at this time, to a two-star major general, and was now placed by recommendation in charge of the 4th Infantry. The appointment was made in October of 1940. What's the shortest amount of time you ever spent at a job, Ted?
The shortest amount? Year and a half.
Year and a half? That's. I once lasted 96 hours at at UPS loading trucks. And when I say 96 hours, I don't mean on the clock. I mean in real time, 96 hours. I was out of there. If there was a four-day weekend, I spent mine at a UPS.
2 days.
2 days was yours? They're short, man. Now, this guy's got an interesting gig. He gets put in charge of all this, and wait till you see how fast it all goes to shit on him. Like we said earlier, Lloyd has this good look about him, right? People often commented on his confident but cocky nature and his stoic-looking face. General George Marshall, the U.S. Army Chief of Staff, if you want to talk about having a friend in a high place, this is him, very fond of our boy Lloyd, remarking once, I like that man. You can see determination all over his face. All right? So much like he sees something like determination right here. I've seen determination before on my sister's face when a customer comes up to her at the Home Depot and waits for her to acknowledge them. And Carrie's waiting game that she plays. Because I don't know if you guys know this, at the Home Depot,
don't
acknowledge customers.
Because they might ask a question.
Exactly.
Well, Home Depot employees, their vision is based on movement, much like a snake. So,
or T-Rex.
But yeah, so they like the way that Lloyd looks. And Lloyd's an interesting guy. Because he looks the part, people want to tend to hire him for stuff. He's got this bombastic attitude towards him, too. Everybody's like, oh, that guy doesn't take any shit. It turned out he takes a lot of shit. So, Now, he's considered by Lloyd to be one of the best, right? Or they consider Lloyd to be one of the best, I should say. And he's not alone in thinking that. By other referrals from, like, really good names like Omar Bradley, and then again George Marshall, when you're the U.S. Army Chief of Staff, you're listened to when they talk to you about stuff. Eisenhower keeps getting all these referrals. Now, Ted, you've been working as a comic for how long?
God, it's got to be 15 years or so.
Now, how many times have you been told, like, you got to see this comic. He's gonna be great with you. Let him open up for you on the road. You know, come check him out.
650,000.
And he's blowing up, and then you get there, and he stinks.
649,000 out of 650,000.
Yeah, but you were nice. You kept me around a little while longer. You didn't fire me right away.
I saw potential in your face.
That's not bad, sir. Not bad. Eisenhower winds up reluctantly caving in and giving Lloyd a high-ranking command in the Africa campaign in what was going to become known as Operation Torch. Ted, off the top of your head, what do you know about Operation Torch?
Not too much.
Really, it's something that gets glanced over in the big scheme of the war.
But it's huge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Operation Torch?
Operation Torch.
Yeah, I don't think we learned a lot about the African tour in high school.
No, because as far as really Americans are concerned, it's very funny because Americans think World War II started with D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
They ignore everything else here. So when the Americans come into the war, they immediately are pushing, all right, let's invade Europe. And the Brits are like, you guys don't understand. Okay, we've been here a couple of years. We get that you're full of piss and vinegar and you can't wait to fight. But they're trying to figure it all out. Now, the Allied commands, so you have the Free French people, the French freedom fighters, and you got a lot of the other Allied commands. Canada's involved, the U.S. is involved, and Britain's involved. We all have that special relationship, too, where we pretty much stole all of our military tradition from Britain. So,
yeah.
One of the best quotes I ever heard, too, by the way, this was in the book Band of Brothers was based off of,
mm-hmm.
And it was a really great quote, and they said that the Brits and the Yanks, when they were training to come together in the war here, it's interesting because the Brits were actually seeing combat, right? And the Yankees, the Americans hadn't really seen shit yet. So when they were training to get ready for all these things in preparation for the eventual D-Day invasion, one of the quotes from one of the Toms, if you will, because we covered this before. In World War I, the Germans were Jerry's and the Brits were Tom's. So Tom and Jerry, the cartoon, is the Brits and the Germans fighting each other. Remember, they're always trying to kill one another? All right?
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Little tie-in on that one, yeah. So makes you laugh a little bit. But one of the great quotes I heard over there was when the Yanks and the Brits were being forced to work together, they were training in Britain. And the quote from the Brits was, the problem with you Americans is that you're oversexed, overstimulated, and over here. And the American comeback was, the problem with you Brits is that you're understimulated, undersexed, and under Eisenhower. Yeah, that's a good sign, too, when you're like, hey, you guys have been doing a great job over here with the war, but we're the new guy in town, and we got Eisenhower. Ike's going to fuck the Huns up. Tell your guys to step down, man. So they all agree Eisenhower's the right man for the job. Eisenhower does not make bad decisions. When you look back, he does not make bad decisions. As a president, too, he's the reason we have the highways that we were just driving to get to this here studio. But fascinating guy in his own right, our boy Dwight D. Eisenhower. But he's skeptical of placing Lloyd in command over his preferred candidate. Okay? He has a preferred candidate, but Operation Torch is going to be very important because Operation Torch is going to be the Allied invasion of Nazi-held North Africa. They don't think, the Brits are trying to tell everybody, you can't invade Europe yet. The Americans aren't trained. They're not battle-hardened or whatever. We don't really know. There's too many variables. So let's invade North Africa instead, and then you can sit there and you can have North Africa. You can then invade Sicily and Italy and start kicking over Mussolini and all his dog shit. So that's the idea here. And it winds up becoming it's going to be a great idea on paper. This is going to provide access for the later invasion to Europe too because North Africa, it shares that coast right there in the Mediterranean. So as they're moving on, it's also going to be a three-headed attack, if you will. This will also help split the Nazi forces and ease the pressure on Russia on the Eastern Front, like we were talking about earlier, Ted.
Yeah.
Russia, those are some bad motherfuckers.
They were serious.
Yeah.
They really were.
Yeah, don't invade Russia in winter. That just, it seems to be, like the motto on the show is don't fuck with TR, but if we did Global Loser, it would just be don't fight a land war in Russia in the winter.
Never.
No. Just not going to go good for you. I mean, we're bitching right now. We're about to get 3 inches of snow. Imagine, we have to eat each other to survive.
3 inches. I do 3 inches overnight.
So now the Eastern Front's going to be eased off of the idea that now the Nazis are going to have to split their forces. And then also in addition, you're going to have – there's this idea that in North Africa, even though it's Nazi-held territory, they're not really enthusiastic about it. So the idea that you could have – you could be seen as liberators, that the Allied forces are going to land there and you're going to have the underground nature of the North African people who are all like mostly on paper French, I would say. And you're going to have this thing blow up here. So Operation Torch, very, very, very important. The feeling is you're going to be able to have a massive success over here, and you can build off of that. You know, get a nice couple of wins, you know, to go into a playoffs kind of a thing. So Eisenhower is skeptical, like we talked about here, about putting Lloyd in command. His preferred candidate is a guy by the name of Patton, Kerry. You ever hear of him?
Nah, definitely not.
Well, he succumbed to the recommendation of his peers, okay? Well,
so what's interesting is that Fredendall pre-war rank was above Eisenhower.
Yes.
Which is, like, baffling.
Well, it's like when I know we always go back to comedy here, but you'll see, like, a new comic get a Netflix special or something. You'll hear a grumpy old comic, like, this fucking kid getting a special. What the hell? Who's going to what? And you're just like, well, he's a pretty funny kid. So Eisenhower, not a funny kid, but really great general. So. Right. But he was bitching a little bit about that because Fredendall, he's really good at excuses. He's like, oh, well, they're not making me the Allied commander because, this and blah, 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 blah. And they're going to have their own guys they're going to bring in. Oh, you know, it's all rigged against me here. Eisenhower goes ahead, puts him in charge, later sends a telegraph upon seeing Lloyd and his organizational skills. So you can knock Fredendall for a lot of shit. But as an organizer, he was pretty great. So you want to do admin? That's great. You want to learn something? That's great. You want to do the combat thing? We'll see how that goes.
He would have been a great wedding planner. <That's>
Oh, my God. And then you're going to walk down the aisle here, at which time the DJ is going to play this music. Oh, my God. Imagine now the contrast to that has to be Patton as a wedding planner. I don't know what you want to do. Whatever. Fuck it. Who cares? I'm going to ride a Jeep down here. My dog's coming.
I like that combination of things, too.
George Patton, wedding planner. So,
what a reality show.
It would be a good one here. Now, Patton, larger than life, as we're going to get to as well. But now our boy Fredendall gets put in charge over here. And upon seeing the organizational skills, Eisenhower actually sends out a telegraph with a singing endorsement of Lloyd, all right, to our boy George Marshall. And he says, bless the day you urged upon me this man, Lloyd Fredendall. I cheerfully acknowledge my previous doubts appear to be unfounded. All right, jeez. So he had one good show, Ted.
Yeah, that's all
it. He had one good show, and there's multiple shows in a weekend. All right?
Boy, there's so many names I'd like to see.
It's not burning bridges, all right?
It's American Loser.
With a fraction of the listener base. another critique. Yeah, for now. Thank you, Kerry. That's very optimistic of you. She's being nice to me, so she's about to be mean. Another critique of Fredendall. This one was
Now she is.
This one's interesting here. Ted Daniels, one of the greatest shit talkers I've ever met in my life. This one's pretty good. I would almost want to read this in your voice. This is another critique of Fredendall by one of his peers. Small in stature, loud, rough in speech, outspoken in his opinions and critical of superiors and subordinates alike. He was inclined to jump to conclusions which were not always well-founded. Fredendall rarely left the command post for personal visits and reconnaissance, yet he was impatient with the recommendations of subordinates more familiar with the terrain and conditions than he. So this guy's a douche.
He really is.
Oh, I was going to say, were you describing Jeff Ross?
That's a
up until the military stuff, I was just like, wait, that sounds familiar.
It's weird, right? Because I came into this where I was like, maybe Fredendall just had – maybe he got a bad break because a lot of the losers on the show get bad breaks. Fredendall did this shit to himself, and we're going to prove that here as we go. Eisenhower, in his personal correspondence, wrote that he still preferred Patton over Lloyd Fredendall, but Fredendall was like a close second, so we'll give it to him. Eisenhower's doubts would later prove correct at the Battle of Kasserine Pass in North Africa. Now, there's that great line in Band of Brothers, Ted, from Bill Garner, my favorite – possibly my favorite American of all time. He goes, yeah, my brother's over in Africa. He says it's hot. Like, oh, no shit, it's hot in Africa. So Patton is in charge of the Eastern campaign of the invasion, and that's aimed over at – have you ever heard of a movie by the name of Casablanca?
I have.
Yeah, this is where Patton's landing.
Never heard of it.
So, no, never heard of it?
Never. Not once.
Well, there's a great quote from that movie. But the whole thing is just the idea of the Allied and the Axis powers and its secret police and underground spies. It's a cool idea. You know what I mean? But now Patton lands over there. Lloyd and his men are part of the Center Task Force, which is aimed at Oran. So Lloyd had the 509th Paratroopers, real badass motherfuckers. And then he also had the First Army, a.k.a. the Big Red One, okay, a legendary group, and then the U.S. First Armored Division. The men were prepared for tank, ground, and air warfare. Lloyd Lance becomes the de facto governor of Oran, because when you land with tanks and shit, people want to hear what you have to say.
From the comfort of a ship.
Also true. Now, here's the worst part, because you're right about that detail. We're going to get into how comfortable Lloyd liked to be on a battlefield, or as far
off
away.
Off a battlefield.
Yeah, it gets embarrassing for him, too. He is mocked by his own men for living in a palace-like camp, while his men lived in trenches with poor quality food.
He lived in the Grand Hotel of Oran.
That's what they called it, mockingly. Yeah, she's right.
The Grand Hotel.
Which always makes you laugh, too. Lloyd also develops a reputation now for not visiting the front lines and playing things safely out of harm's way from a distance and in large comfort away from his men actually doing the fighting. So,
listen, I can't knock him for that. Princess. I would have been the same thing.
You say that, but I've seen you angry before, and angry Teddy wants to be right up there in the middle of it. So all you got to do is get pissed off at the Nazis a little bit, and General Teddy Daniels is coming down with some fire.
They should have started calling him Princess Fred and Doll.
Princess Fred and
Doll. That actually sounds more good.
Sounds more accurate, right?
That's my favorite thing that we did in the military was you would just and nowadays they would call it misgendering, where it can be a problem with the trans community or whatever. But the thing that used to make us laugh is that, hey, where's the – like we'd make fun of my buddy Cricknally. Be like, hey, where's Cricknally? Tell her to get her ass over here. You know, and
we'll get to that now.
Cricknally's a dude, so it would just be funny that way. Now, Fredendall lands over here. He's in – leads these men into Tunisia, which we covered earlier in a Barbary Pirates episode. Happen in place, Tunisia. They are against the Nazis' command. Now, you're a diehard Jets fan.
Yes.
Teddy. Okay, diehard Jets fan. But there's a little part of you that has to respect Bill Belichick, right?
Really a very small part of me.
It hurts you to say it, but you got to admit the results are
very
there.
Very small.
Well, imagine now that you have to find a way. You're going up against the Desert Fox.
Probably one of the greatest guys on the Nazi side.
He was an amazing guy, Erwin Rommel, absolutely brilliant. Now, what's crazy too is that we're at war and he's getting compliments from Winston Churchill, and the Americans are talking about it, and they're just like, man, this guy, hey, let's not take this lightly. Rommel's not here to fuck around. But then there's also this ridiculous press campaign. Rommel's oddly finally reported on by the British and American papers. He had earned a reputation as an able commander, the most brilliant tank commander in the world, a chivalrous man who fought a clean war, and this is the quote from the British papers, an all-around decent chap. All right?
Jeez. Was it possible he was an impending free agent?
That's
and they were thinking it was getting him to our side?
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, when you have to go up against your men here, because Rommel is beloved by his men. So you got Fredendall, whose men already make fun of him and call him a pussy. Then you have Rommel, who's beloved by his men and considered to be a brilliant field commander, unlike Lloyd, who has not yet led men into battle.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What do you got, Kara?
No.
Oh, I thought you did. She leaned in like she had some. I'm sorry. Now, Rommel, he gets all this good coverage in the papers. They later show that was actually done by Goebbels, that he wanted to make sure that if we can just focus on – if you're losing to Rommel, then it's not really a dishonor, because it's like, oh, well, we tried. We hung in close with the Patriots, but we just couldn't beat them. But we played a good game, and then the Patriots are still going to win the division. So
again.
Yeah, there's a way of spinning that they like to do. But Rommel leads his Panzer tank divisions. Now, you want to talk about a modern marvel. It's very weird because you don't ever want to praise the Nazis. Let's be very clear about that. But you have to be in awe of the German war machine. That whole Blitzkrieg thing they were doing, the Panzer tanks were the best tanks, the best machine guns. They literally had if the U.S. didn't get involved in the war, Germany was so far ahead of a lot of the British and French stuff that it wasn't even going to be a contest. I mean, nobody wants to talk about this. When you talk about the numbers game, the Germans never really had a decisive numbers advantage. They were just very good at what they did. It's terrifying. So... It gets interesting because now the Panzer tank divisions are brought in to attack the American defensive forces holding a little stretch of in between the Atlas Mountains and Tunisia known as Kasserine Pass. All right, that's thought to be absolutely critical to the success of the campaign. Now, when you have a goal line defense and you have a guy who's – you have a team that you're playing up against that has a killer running back, you stack the box. Uh-huh. Right? You get everybody up front. That way, when they run the ball, you can stuff them. Right? Or like Kerry said, you you go ahead and throw, and then you lose. You throw a pick that costs Seattle the second Super Bowl.
Wind up a yard short.
Yeah. Didn't really go good for them on that. But so the idea was that if you could stack the box, you could stop the running backs here. But what they did is Lloyd Frendahl's so fucking stupid. There's really just no defense for it. Very thinly lays out all of his men and spreads the line so wide that the men are going to be easily overrun. And then if they are being overrun, the line is spread so thin that the guys who would, do a counterattack to try to stop the advance can't even relieve the other lines because they're so spread out they can't see.
Right. And I guess because he flunked out of West Point, has his own language made up as to what everything is. Like grid points are, this place She's is right. called C. Yeah.
Yep. He was
no one understood it.
Well, he was also
a diva. The rich coat-tight of generals.
Well, he was a diva, too. He didn't like working with anybody else. So the other commanders that are in there, he's not dealing with them. And he's like, oh, they're here to steal my glory or whatever. I'm running the show. And when you don't visit the lines, you can't even see obvious things, right? So imagine if you're the coach of a football team, because we keep going back to this reference. I apologize if you're not a sports fan. you can't even see. You're not even coming to practice, and then you're not even watching the games. And you're just like, hey, why are we losing? It's like, you're not here, dude. But – our boy Lloyd had taken a very weak defense.
That guy.
He's dumb, dude. This makes the lines very easy to overrun, like we talked about. Lloyd, as the Rommel, the Desert Fox's brilliant panzer divisions are marching towards the very weak American lines, and these guys haven't seen combat yet, really, for the most part. Lloyd is right there in the thick of it with his men. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. He's 60 miles behind him. In his very comfortable camp that Eisenhower even had to get they essentially – what they mock it as is they say that his headquarters was built like the Pope Mobile.
Jeez.
That's what he was pretty much. And Eisenhower had to see the place and go, hey, just so you guys know, it is important that – I know we're all generals here, but we do have to assume some risk on the battlefield. You know, you can't really – you can't be this much of a pussy. Frendahl's showing up for battle wrapped up in bubble wrap. You know what I mean? That's what he's sitting there for.
Yeah, his biggest battle was trying to get a Cadillac made.
Exactly.
Yes, true. Also
a bulletproof Cadillac.
Talk about that.
He was trying to copy Eisenhower with his bulletproof Cadillac, and he kept on making calls to Overand, like, where's my Cadillac? And so you're more worried about that than your own men's safety right now?
Well, it's like you said, too, is that since Eisenhower was beneath him in rank pre-war, and it was a wartime promotion that put Eisenhower over him. He's like, well, if Eisenhower has one, why don't I have one? So our boy Lloyd's a douchebag. But he's 60 miles behind, comfortable in his camp, and often out of communication with his field officers. Rommel's a brilliant tactician to begin with, has the devastating panzers. They turn the Battle of Kasserine Pass into a decisive German rout. Victory for the Afrika Korps, with K as they spelt it. So if you want to look at a cool uniform, too, by the way, the Nazi Germans' Afrika Korps uniform was really cool looking. A lot of that, it's woodland camo and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but it blends in. I mean, they were ahead of the game on a lot of stuff, man.
They were well dressers. I mean, they look sharp.
Isn't that hilarious too? Where it's they're the most. I mean, there's a truly diabolical nature to the SS, but then you see their outfits.
Listen, I can understand why people joined. They looked great.
We love to dress. That's the thing. We dress to impress, and then we also – they have an undue influence. We have to get rid of them.
Is it better than the winged hussars?
It's up there, man. It's very fascinating with that stuff. Now,
but is it better?
Better, no, I would argue. But the route here at Kasserine Pass – infuriates Eisenhower, who's already hearing these horrible reports on the morale of the men under Lloyd. It's not good when the feedback was, they literally said, to a man, he has lost all confidence in Frendahl as their commander. Nobody believes in this guy anymore. So they also talk about how they call him a moral and physical coward and that Lloyd is unapproachable in his tendencies. Unapproachable is the worst word you can get called in the military. If they call you unapproachable, that means you fucked up and nobody wants to work with you. And when that happens, it's a very short leash, and you're about to get a lot of shitty duty assignments.
Well, they had someone come in and essentially assess him as a general.
Yes.
And then offered that guy the position to replace him. And he was like, well, that's kind of unfair. I just assessed him.
Yeah, don't – you can't replace me you can't replace somebody with their biggest critic.
Right.
Without it looking immoral, if you will. But – we're in comedy, Ted, so that's the first thing people do. Hey, how is that comedy show at this venue? How about I come in and for $100 less,
I'll fix it.
I'll give you four more comedians. Yeah, fucking Missy Allen. I don't care. I got no respect on that one. But yeah, it is what it is. Now, Eisenhower is furious over here, and the loss of Kasserine Pass breaks the camel's back. Now, it was a great quote we were talking about earlier, some of the stuff that comes out of Patton's mouth. But on March 5th, 1943, after his success over with his part of the command, Eisenhower, the Supreme Allied Commander, flies to Tebessa to inform Fredendall that he's being relieved of command and that General George Patton will now be taking over. So don't let the door kick you in the ass on the way out. But they had to phrase it a certain way because you have to protect these egos. And Fredendall still has some powerful friends. So the decision is masked as a mere change of assignment to Fredendall. So imagine that as a comedian. Hey, you've been headlining a lot. Have you tried hosting? It's just like headlining, but you do a third of the time, and most of it's announcements about how to better enjoy the show.
And we'll give you $50.
It's also a third of the pay. But the decision to make it a change of assignment for Fredendall. Patton arrived to assume the command while Fredendall was at breakfast. Nobody really knows if Fredendall is aware. I think it's one of those things where he hides it, right? He hides it. He's like, oh, well, it's just a change of command. They need me back here because I'm an excellent trainer. So, yeah, I'm not really doing much over in Africa. It's, you know, it's not a big part of the war. But we got this huge thing coming up called D-Day, so I got to go prep the boys for that. So he plays that character, but he knows in his heart that he's being replaced because he's a disgrace as a field commander. So Fredendall's at breakfast when Patton walks in there. The two men had not liked one another since they were both officers back at Fort Benning. And Patton conducted the change of command with honor, and Lloyd was sent back to the United States. So they kept him. They gave him like a good handshake and said, hey, you did the best you could, right? It's not bad. So they're not really trying to kick him while he's down here. But you got to get this guy the fuck out of command. So Patton kind of thought that due to the war in Africa becoming a tank affair, Patton just assumed he was being put in charge because he knew more about tanks. We're going to cover this on the second episode here. Not of this. We're going to finish up Fredendall here. But the next episode of the show that we're doing is about Pancho Villa. All right. Pancho Villa, General Blackjack Pershing, was sent on an expedition to hunt him down. He was a Mexican revolutionary. And his right-hand man was George Patton. So Patton cut his teeth in mobile warfare for the first time that the Americans ever used automobiles. So he knows a shitload about tanks. He's been there since the ground floor. So they bring Patton over, man. Patton wrote fondly of the quality character Fredendall showed during the change of command and presumed that he had only been put in command, like I said, because it was a tank affair, and also later wrote to his wife, he said, you know, I just think that poor Lloyd Fredendall was just put in a position where he couldn't succeed, and he's being replaced by, you know, circumstances beyond his control. Within a week of inspecting the new command, he wrote to his wife, Fredendall has done nothing to justify his existence.
Oh, jeez.
That's dark. All right, that's heavy. So Patton's position in command. Now, you want to talk about getting the right guy for
the right job. I'd punch you in the mouth if someone said that to me. Like, full on, just rage over my eyes. I would come to later on and be like, what the fuck just happened?
Well, that's nerve-wracking too, man, because it's like if Kerry learns how to be a sound engineer, imagine that. She's going to start trying to push you out of this show. Yep.
That might be why I'm here.
Here comes the left turn. She's been paying a lot of attention. You can't see it, but Kahuna just switched her mic off. It's fucking funny.
That's the first thing you'll learn.
Yeah.
So here's
if she thinks I'm putting it back on, she is sorely mistaken.
Well, here's where it gets great, man, because now you know you got the right guy for the right job, and he makes things happen right away. This is fantastic. Patton's position in command quickly changes the attitude of the Allied and Axis forces. First thing he does, gets his men better food. All right, he's not. So you got a guy, a pussy, showing up in bubble wrap like Lloyd Fredendall, and then you got a guy on the front lines like Patton, who's like, "My dog's here. I drove my jeep here. I carry two pistols. What the fuck? Let's go kick the shit out of some of these goddamn Huns." And it kind of changes the way you look at things.
Yeah.
So they're almost bringing in a Bill Parcells type guy who's going to talk shit to his players and kind of check your attitude at the door kind of a thing. Okay. So I love that about him. This, some of the quotes I'm about to read here from Patton, we'll call them Pattonisms, all right? The Allies are no longer worried if they're good enough to beat the German army. Now Patton's telling them, we're going to beat the German army. The propaganda machine that was behind Rommel, that was in, you know, from Goebbels all the way in Germany to you know, getting these fond reports written about him in the British and American papers, there's a new guy in town, all right? We're not really, you know, going to sit here and be like, well, Rommel's just so great. Isn't he awesome how the way he kicks the shit out of us? We're going to counter you with our own Rommel. So we got old blood and guts now, fucking Patton himself. You want to talk about a guy that's instantly quotable. Larger than life to begin with. Here's some of these quotes. May God have mercy upon my enemies, because I won't.
I like that.
Oh, my God.
If everyone is thinking alike, then somebody isn't thinking. It is foolish and wrong to mourn the men who died. Rather, we should thank God such men lived. And this one's my favorite here. Success is how high you bounce when you hit rock bottom. Hmm. That's a fucking decent one right there, man.
That one's actually not bad. I hate that. I actually kind of like that one.
Well, and then his most famous quote, too. The object of war is not to die for your country. It's to make the other bastard die for his.
That's a good point.
I have a man crush on Patton. My hair is on my arms are standing up.
My uncle served under Patton.
No shit.
Yeah, I had an uncle who served under Patton. And he said the guy was amazing. And he said, but, I mean, some of the stuff I saw was so horrific. He said, but he was the kind of guy, like, if he told you and you knew you were going to die, and he said, you have to go over there now. And we're just like, all right. Because you believed in him so much
that follow him into hell.
You would go anywhere with him because they knew that he would do the same for his men.
So in a battle royale between Rommel and Patton, who do you think would win?
I mean,
Fredendahl would win.
You're talking Bret the Hitman Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's what you're getting out of here. So it's the excellence of execution, Erwin Rommel, versus American badass, Stone Cold Steve Austin, a.k.a. Patton.
I'm putting my money on Patton.
Now, here's what's fascinating, too. Patton actually he would study German warfare. And so he knew what they were doing. And there's that great quote from the movie. He goes, Rommel, you son of a bitch, I read your book. So when you're sitting there and you're reading the plays, you know what you're
doing. So it's like reading the playbook of the other team.
Yeah, studying a little bit of time here. Ooh, a Spygate reference. Good for you, Kerry. So, now here's how you know Patton's great, man. He becomes an American legend almost overnight, turns around the Allied war effort in Africa, makes it a success. Even Rommel himself comments on Patton's impact about how quickly the Americans learned to fight the war on an even playing field. One of Rommel's comments was that British experience was quickly combined with American equipment, and that was the doom for them over in Africa. And that Patton's mobile offensive that forced Rommel out of Africa was the most astonishing achievement in mobile warfare I have ever seen. That's Rommel saying, man, you look beautiful beating the shit out of me.
Finally, it's a fight.
So it is finally a fight. Now, Patton, then, because you had success over in Africa, you're now able to invade Italy. Very cool story over there. Mitz, you get into Sicily, get into Italy, now you're back in the Mediterranean. They make their fight into Europe. Patton himself, actually, with the Third Army, breaks the Nazi stand over at the Battle of the Bulge, relieves the 101st Airborne, who to this day will tell you they never asked to be rescued by Patton. They were holding the line just fine. But Patton breaks through the line, and that's like the last stand for them, the Battle of the Bulge here. Patton also makes it into Germany himself. So Fredendahl, 60 miles behind line in the comfort of his grand hotel of Oran, as Kerry said. He's not he wasn't going to be the guy to get you to the promised land. I think you made the right call with Patton because he's in Germany at this point. It gets a little bit crazier here, too. He's now in Germany itself. Fredendahl, sent back overseas in various training commands, was never allowed to lead men into combat again for the rest of his career.
Good.
He received a hero's welcome upon his return because they got to spin it a certain way. They can't say, here's our disgraced Lloyd Fredendahl, because you'll ruin his career.
I heard they bust in crowds to cheer for him.
It would. Is that true? Or are you fucking around?
I'm fucking around.
Oh, my God. It's believable. It's really believable.
It's like a halftime show at the Super Bowl.
In the beginning, Trump paid people to attend his rallies. It sounded legit for a second.
It's a history podcast.
It's like in a studio, they light up the applause sign and everyone has to applause.
So that's what's crazy.
Wait, Carrie, that's actually excellent. That's so true.
As soon as you find out, too, that like Teddy was saying, that if once you realize that the people on the field at the halftime shows for the Super Bowl, once you realize they can't hear the music that's being played, it changes everything because you're just like, oh, wow. It's like when a rock band plays at the MTV Music Awards and everybody who's paid in the front is waving. People are just rocking out. And you're like, you don't even know who Nine Inch Nails is.
Exactly.
There's no way you know who Nine Inch Nails is. Look at you. You're 13. But
that's like with the recent – I think it was last year. They had Aerosmith perform with Post Malone. And literally most of the comments that I saw on Twitter were, who the fuck is Aerosmith? And I was just like, no.
That is such a weird mix.
It's an interesting one.
It was an odd mashup, but
I wouldn't. Always good when you're hanging out with guys with face
just
tattoos.
Get the dog and the frisbee again, please. 15 minutes, throw the dog. He's exhausted. We start the second half.
And everybody's into it. That was the other part, too.
Who doesn't love that?
You're right there. Now, I just want to wrap up on our boy Fred and Doll here, because this wore away at my soul a little bit. Receives a hero's welcome upon his return to the States, and since he was never formally admonished by Eisenhower, there's no paper record of being like, hey, you're out of command because you're a fucking idiot, because he pretended. He goes, hey, dude, need you for this other thing, you know, try to be delicate with him. Because of that, Fred and Doll gets promoted again. Yeah. So they kept his failure was a well-kept secret, and it was easy to chalk up a loss to the Desert Fox. Oh, we lost to Rommel, so at least you played him tight, right? Didn't really play him tight. Gets promoted, like I said, one more time over here. He's running all of the schools. He retires from the Army after the war's end on March 31st, 1946. That's when he retires. Fred and Doll received mostly positive press coverage until the end of the war, when more knowledge started to become available. Because you sent him over, he's like, oh, yeah, it was great over there. We had a great time. Loved everybody. It was a good time, man, honestly. I would do it again if I could. And then the guys that got rid of him come back home, and they're like, he was a fucking idiot. They start talking about him. His biographers have noted that he failed to live up to his own tough-talking nature and bravado. So there's almost like there's a little bit of this, too, where – and I'm not picking on Rex Ryan because I actually love Rex Ryan. I think he's a defensive genius. But there's almost like that thing like that the Jets knew they had to move on when Rex lost the locker room.
That's right.
So as soon as you lose your people, man, you're out of there. That bravado thing, the tough talk, nobody's listening anymore. So that's what Fred does when he presents himself as a hero. He's actually giving away brides at weddings. He's getting all this fawning press coverage. And then somebody writes a sarcastic comment about him, like, World War II hero, in quotes, Lloyd Fred. And because he finally started getting a little bit of bad press, he stopped talking to them completely and kind of moves himself out of the limelight, if you will. Now, some of the people that came back over here, not a good quote when somebody called him. He goes, you know what, Fred and Doll, he was a real son of a bitch. I would never follow that man into combat ever again in my life. They called him a moral and physical coward. Coward doesn't have the oomph on it today that it used to. But if they called you a coward back in the day, you were a spineless gut. I mean, you were that's the worst thing you could possibly
do. You don't think being called a coward now is as –
it doesn't have the same weight to it.
Well, they try to be like, well, I'm just being smarter, man, because I'm not risking my life.
It's also thrown around a lot more now.
Yeah. I would agree.
You know, back then, when you said coward, you really thought about before you called somebody a coward.
It's the original C word.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're right, too, because when you call somebody a coward, they've insulted your honor. You now have to defend your honor. Mm-hmm. And if you sit there and take it, then that's like the absolute word. But now there's this idea of like, whatever, man, you know, kind of that. That's just like your opinion.
Oh, my God.
Best comedy of all time. But, Lloyd proves actually that he is a great administrator and a trainer, but an absolute failure as a field commander. Well, he was the first guy.
They also called him one of the most inept senior officers to hold a high command during World War II.
Wow. Yeah, not good. Not good. He is the first of seven high-ranked commanders to be relieved of combat command and sent back stateside. Almost all the other ones were for medical reasons. So he's the only one that was like, oh, yeah, we got to get rid of him too. Yeah, it turns out he's got shit for brains. That's your medical issue.
You suck.
So as Patton is going on to win the war, and literally in Germany right now, slayed the Hun, Lloyd is back stateside the entire time. I think it's safe to say that Eisenhower made the right decision.
Finally.
That's this episode is going to come out on Tuesday here, Ted. Is there any gigs or anything you want to plug or promote? Where can people find you? Social media, anything?
You can find me in Manalapan, just hanging around. I'm actually off the next couple of weeks, which is great. So I'm,
excellent,
I'm
man.
Just
Check out Ted if you can, man. He works most frequently for the Comedy Shop, and just a quality group of people over there, man. So love working for you guys. We had a goddamn blast on Friday, man.
That was a good one. What a great show.
And you're here on your birthday. You're giving up time with your family here to be with us. So that is not lost on me. I appreciate you.
Well, you've seen my family. That's so. No, I'm only kidding.
No, man, you were great. And you've been listening to the show, too, which I appreciate. So was there anything else you wanted to throw in there?
No, just that I had a great time. Thanks for having me. Learned a lot about Lloyd.
What a douchebag.
Every time I hear Lloyd, I think of the scene in The Shining. Well, Lloyd. But, yeah, had a great time.
I always hear, as soon as I'm hearing it, I picture Entourage when Ari would yell at his Asian assistant, Lloyd!
Yeah.
But, Cahoon, you got anything for us behind the ones and twos? You want to plug your other podcast?
Nah, we're currently on our seasonal break, but we'll be airing the two last episodes we recorded this Tuesday and then the following Tuesday.
Cahoon is on hiatus, baby.
Yeah, I'm on vacation.
Not bad, brother. I'm happy you're here,
That's why he's sitting here in his underwear and just beers, no shirt.
That is the only – if we could just get him to wear pants, he'd be that much better of a sound engineer.
Is that what that smell is?
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow, look whose mic is back on.
Carrie,
and back off.
Hey, how you doing? What's going on?
Oh, my God.
And it was at that moment Carrie realized, yeah, she was fired from the American
Podcast.
Well, final quick question here for you, Carrie Burke. Is there any? Where can they find you? What aisle are you going to be working in?
Yeah, I have no gigs.
Turn the sound off.
I have no gigs coming up whatsoever.
Do you have any gigs ever?
No.
Oh, not bad. No, Carrie's very funny. She's just not a comedian. She's more well-adjusted than me.
Funny looking.
That being said, guys, if you like the show, I love doing this show. We lose money every time we do it. I'm not asking for your money. I'm asking you to do me a favor. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's all I'm asking. I get people write. You can write a funny-ass review, too, man. There's a couple of funny ones. Brad Frizzell, I think I'm saying his name, wrote a super funny one. He called me the Fran Drescher of comedians. he actually wrote, he goes, I think you're he's probably overpaid in the clubs and underpaid for the podcast. And I'm happy to tell you, I am underpaid for both, sir. I operated a deficit here on the show. But if you love the show, man, we're on SoundCloud, iTunes. We're going to be on the Laughable app now. We're trying to grow this son of a bitch if we can. We have fun with it. And you can check me out at KP Burke Sucks on Twitter and Instagram. There is an official American Loser Instagram account now. We put up some of the visual elements of the show. So if you guys are into that stuff, man, I really anything you can do to help me out, just follow it. I'll follow you back, okay? I look to see if you're a Russian model. You know what I mean? Like some sort of a hack spam account. If you're one of those, I'll still follow you. All right? I got no dignity. And the show is trending over in Russia, by the way. So to all of our brothers over there, Nostrovia, it's very good. We are the infrastructure of America is crumbling. I will be at Thatcher McGee's this coming Tuesday. So the episode is coming out on Tuesday. If you're hearing this and you want to come hang out, it's Thatcher McGee's over in West Caldwell. We're raising money for a good cause. This is the one I'm excited about. I want to get it. So one of my good friends in comedy is Lynn Coplitz, one of the funniest fucking comics ever. She's a legend. And she's actually going to be bringing me with her Thursday, Friday, and Sunday over to Levity Live in West Nyack. I'm going to be featuring for her on all the shows there. So it's a show Thursday, two Friday, and a Sunday. There's two shows on the Saturday over there. I can't do them. I'm very excited. I'm actually going to be opening up for Bobby Kelly for the first time. One of your favorites, right, Ted?
I love Bobby Kelly.
You've worked
Kelly.
With him a couple of times. Yes. Eh? Fucking just a gem of
what town is the Lynn Coplitz?
It's West Nyack.
West Nyack, I'm coming for you.
Oof. And that's why I love Teddy. But we got that going on. And then also St. Patrick's Day weekend. On the Thursday before St. Patrick's, going to be at John and Peter's over in, I think, New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Yes, New Hope.
Real good time over there. And then on the 15th and 16th, I will be on all the shows with Dave Landau from the Anthony Cumia Show.
Nice.
Over at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights. This is the time of year where I get booked a lot. Because people are racist and they need an Irish comedian for their shows in March. So, but that being said, man, we have a great time. So I want to thank all my guests, Teddy, Carrie, love you guys. It's this group feels like family today, so that's great. And then Cahoon, this show does not happen without you, brother, so thank you.
No problem.
And thank you to Mike and Ming over at Shared Universe Studio. Guys, my name is KP Burke, and that was Lloyd Fredendahl, American Loser.
An American loser the day I was born. American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.